Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, a live recording from Motherhood Retreat 2025. Elizabeth, we had a great time, didn't we?
We had such a great time.
It was amazing to meet so many of you. Three things that are super important that we want you to know today before you get into this episode, which is a really fun one. Lots of laughter, lots of tears, actually. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
A lot of tears. And so three things. First, we announced at this event our next Motherhood Retreat. And guess what? It is where, sweetheart?
Franklin, Tennessee.
And it is April 23rd through 25th in Franklin, Tennessee. Our East Coast sisters, we are coming out to you in the spring. We cannot wait to be with you in Franklin. So tickets are live on sale right now. You can click the link in the show notes. You can check that out. Instagram, anywhere. Just check it out. You get tickets. They're live right now. And also early bird pricing before the end of the year. So you can check that out.
And this time we've got a couple of guests coming. Megan Faith Marshman will be there. Our friend Greta Eskridge will be there. We haven't announced that anywhere.
This is the first. Greta,
you're the first to hear.
I hope she comes because we just told everyone she's coming.
She's coming.
I know
she's coming.
So that's happening. So ladies, mark your calendar on that. Men, Intentional Fatherhood. Justin and I and a whole slew of dudes are going to be in Costa Mesa, California at Rock Harbor Church, February 19th through 21, getting together to do our own version of the Motherhood Retreat, the Fatherhood Retreat. And guys, I cannot tell you how excited Justin and I are about this. And there's such a crew coming. I can't even believe the caliber of men that have already signed up for this and can't wait to connect with you all there. So please, men, sign up. Great Christmas gift as well. Like if you're thinking, what would a dad love? Give him a trip. A mom too, by the way. Yeah. That's I'm giving you a trip for Christmas. I think you would love that if I did that for you. Mm-hmm. Lastly, Sowing a Hidden Seed devotional that I wrote. We actually are now officially have released it for sale. So here's a cool detail is online right now. You can go purchase the book, and as was mentioned earlier, great Christmas idea. It's the holidays, but that just released this week. And we just want to say, please go grab that as a resource. The Motherhood Retreat, it was bonkers. I could not believe.
It was nuts.
There was lines. We ran out of books two different times. We ended up selling over 850 copies, which is just absolutely mind-boggling, overwhelming. And just to say that many ladies or families praying, what an incredible image, you know? And so anyway, if this is helpful in your prayer journey, get it. If not, just start praying. That is the biggest encouragement. Like it's not about having this resource. It's more about you just taking the time to really commit to pray. So those three things, motherhood in Franklin, Tennessee, fatherhood in Costa Mesa, Sowing a Hidden Seed out now. And lastly, you're going to enjoy this conversation because it's one with myself, Phil, Diane, Elizabeth, and our wonderful, wonderful guest host, Joey Odom. From Reclaim Well. This guy is a legend.
He really is.
He is a legend and so gifted.
He's like your brother you didn't know you had.
It's also completely the physical opposite of me in every way. But we had the best time there. So these are questions that were actually submitted at the event, but I have no doubt they will absolutely overlap with your life and where you're at specifically. And so please enjoy the conversation today at live at Motherhood Retreat 2025. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast live from the Motherhood Retreat 2025 in Portland, Oregon. Can we please make some noise, ladies in the room? Go. That gave me goosebumps. That was insane. We're here at the Motherhood Retreat and could not be more excited. We've had a great time. So many sessions with Elizabeth, Phil, Diane, myself. We've had a great time.
And last year we invited Joey out to kind of co-host, or rather host this moment. And it was so good. We're like, we just got to do this again and do more. And so Joey Odom of Reclaim Well is here, and we're really thankful. Can we just welcome Joey as our host, step-in host?
It's so good to be with these ladies. This is fantastic. I'm really excited for this discussion. We have about an hour, and I want to get right into it. I want to start on a little bit of a serious note. Again, everybody knows here I like to joke around. Let's start on a serious note. Probably the biggest question we had that came in is for Elizabeth and Diane, and it's, where did you get those pantsuits?
Because they're fine.
We hear a lot of pantsuit questions. Let's hear it, ladies. By the way, Brooke, you had kind of a cream number the other day that looked nice. I'm not cutting. And I want to know where you got that one, too.
Got it.
But, ladies, where do we get the pantsuits? Because there's a lot of drip on stage like this.
I got mine at Banana Republic.
Look at that. Come on.
John Mark would be
okay. This is such a funny question because at my birthday with my family this past year, my little brother Matthew, we do birthday affirmations in my family. And he was saying, I just like love how confident you are. And like one year at the motherhood retreat, you were like wearing a power suit. And I just started laughing at him and looked at him and said, I wear the suit because I am so not confident in front of all of these women. So I did it again. I got another suit. Mine was from Aritzia.
By the way, of course the Comer family does birthday affirmations. Am I right? I mean, it's like the most obvious thing in the world.
Camp Comer is primarily just morning affirmations and night affirmations. That's really true. We have like scheduled meetings.
And then in the afternoons, you're writing the affirmations for the evenings.
That's very real.
Okay, now by the way, I think the sneaky fashionista here, by the way, is Phil. Phil, you got, I mean, yeah. Am I right? I mean, Brooke has the leather jacket, but you are always in style, my man. Like, you're always looking good. You got denim on denim right now.
It's Diane. You're absolutely right on that one. Yeah, there's
goodness gracious.
I feel the love of my daughters out here.
Look at that.
You did not want to see me in a pantsuit.
Now that's all I want is to see you in a pantsuit. I will say, for those who are listening at home, Phil gave a talk the other night on his love for his daughters and the father's love for us. And my biggest regret in life now is that I'm not one of Phil's daughters. It was just what a beautiful thing to be. Okay, fellas. Now, Brooke, I'm going to direct this one over to you. Another big question from the weekend is, where do you get those fire meat sticks? Like the meat sticks, like that's a big question. Like people love those.
Okay, so this is really interesting. I didn't know there was like a group of people wondering the origin of the meat sticks that are at these events. There's only one kind. And what's really funny is because they take them out of packaging because our team's great. Can we thank the intentional team for all the food that they do? Yes. What a crew. Our whole team, Abby, Christina, leading that up. I asked this because I got stopped in the lobby. Like, can you please tell us where the meat sticks are from? I was like, we got to talk. Like, you can't just talk to
like
a
that?
Random person you never met and ask this question. Like, I don't know any context of what you're talking about. And I was like, I'll text somebody. So I did, and they are from Costco. Are they the Bavarian?
Wow.
What are they called? Bavarian? Yeah, those ones. They're blue and white packaging, right? You know, we'll hopefully get a photo and throw it up later. Okay, you can have a reference point. But you can know with Costco, you're going to get a great deal.
Wow,
so,
this was the sneakiest product placement. They just became a sponsor, I assume. Is that what happened?
Especially because this is going to be on the podcast. Please, if you work for them,
that's
reach
right.
out.
Yes.
That would be very helpful.
My people at
they
Kirkland.
They could sponsor our next event. That'd be great.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so I do want to start off this idea. I want to start with the ladies, and there's this idea of self-care that a lot of people are talking about. So I'm curious the generational differences on self-care. So I think this is definitely a buzzword that we hear a lot, and it's so important. But that word, I think, probably has a certain meaning to a mom right now, maybe in her 30s and 40s, 20s, but it may have a little bit of a different meaning. Can you tell me, and just for the ladies, will you talk a little bit about self-care and maybe what it means to you and how that may differ generationally?
Oh, I kind of want Elizabeth to go first. I hadn't even thought about it being a difference between us.
But this could just be a dumb guy asking questions. I don't know.
Well, in my observation, and Mom, you can speak to this with more authority, it seems like in my mom's generation, self-care was really looked down on. And there was a lot of emphasis on women being servants, being helpers, which we've unpacked at previous retreats. And women were heavily praised for sacrificing every part of themselves for their families. Now, is that a bad thing for us to sacrifice and to serve and become a servant of our family? No, that's a beautiful thing. But just like we do so often, we tend to overdo certain things in one generation, and then we swing the pendulum all the way the other direction, and really we just overdo it in the other direction. So I think what we saw a lot of in my mom's generation was an overdoing of sacrificing yourself to the point that really became unhealthy. And I think most of us in the room would say it really didn't work, because it ended up leaving those moms, when their kids all left the house, they were so depleted. They had no idea who they were. They had no idea what the next phase of life was supposed to look like. And so accidentally, a lot of them put a lot of pressure on their adult children to fulfill all of those things that they were kind of told were going to fulfill. And then you see now my generation, we've taken it to a whole other level where we've elevated self-care almost as like a god in our life, of like, we make a lot of excuses. I'm just taking care of myself, which can lead to a lot of selfishness. And I think a way to flip it that has been helpful to me is, I don't even know that we should use the word self-care, because really I think we need to be focused on soul care. Like, if our souls are not okay, we are not going to be effectively loving our kids and loving our husband. So we need a rhythm in our lives where we can kind of come up for air, like what Jean-Marc was talking about yesterday, what was ended up kind of being a theme of the morning, of taking time to be able to notice and to understand what I'm feeling. Maybe I just need a nap. Maybe I just need to be by myself for a little bit. Maybe I need to be with friends. Maybe I need to have fun. Like, all of that, yes, we could view as self-care, but really I think it's that soul care, so that we can actually pour ourselves out completely, but we're not pouring ourselves out and burning ourselves out, if that makes sense. And I think there was also a lot of times, and it's still used among moms, like, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I like that. That sounds really good, but it actually puts a little bit of pressure of like, oh, my cup has to be full all the time because I can't pour from an empty cup, and all of this has to be out of like the overflow that God's pouring into me all the time. Like, that's beautiful, but we do have an empty cup a lot of the time. And I think that's where we need to learn to really live so dependent on the Spirit, that He can invade that empty cup, all of our limitations, and He can be strong where we feel super weak and depleted. So I think it's that balance of like being okay with that feeling of depletion and weakness and relying on God's power, but also having rhythms in our lives that feel like it fills us back up and like tends to our soul. Amen.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's good.
Beautiful, in-depth answer. The first thing that came to my mind is that my idea of self-care is to take a long, hot bubble bath. And your idea of self-care is to go take a cold plunge.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Generational.
Definitely. Absolutely.
I hope to never have a cold plunge.
I really want her to go to the... So we have this spot in Bend where you sauna outside and then you get into the river. I just bought 10 sessions of this. I'm
it's demonic.
It's not. My favorite thing was like last year at this time, they were like breaking the ice open so I could get in, and I was like, this is everything.
And he's always asking me to go with him.
Yeah, like, because
that is not soul care to
I'm
me.
Sorry. You're like, what's happening now? Okay, we're going to share separate beds. We're going to take separate beds at a hotel. We can never go to sauna together. I just want to connect with you. Anyway, I just would love to see Diane in that situation. Anyway, keep going.
Diane, I'm with you. I cold plunge, no thank you. I will ask, how do you... Ladies, how can you bring your husbands along on them understanding that you need some soul care? Do you know what I mean? I think maybe it's hard for the husbands to understand. So how can you maybe bring them along in the journey, or how have you done that where they understand this is important to you? Again, back to the full cup and empty cup. So how can you bring your husbands along in that journey?
Well, first of all, I think it took several years into our marriage for me to discover that Phil cannot read my mind. And we have been raised, even my generation, but even more your generation, with the high value of being independent, self-sufficient. Go for it. You go, girl, boss women. And our husbands are wired up so differently than us. They are instinctively have a God-given desire to protect us and to take care of us. And if we don't ask them, then they think we're just being the boss woman. And I don't know about you, but that's, I don't think that's really instinctively female. We are strong, we are warriors. A couple years ago, I spoke on the meaning of the word Ezer. So important, so revolutionary in my life. We are not the little wifey. We are these incredible warrior kind of women who have our families back. But at the same time, we're also really vulnerable and sensitive, and we carry a lot. If we don't tell our husbands, if we don't ask them, if we don't say these words that we've been that have been almost blanked out of our vocabulary, I really need. And then most of our husbands need to hear it about a dozen times before they hear it to us. That's the other thing. Speaking as a hard of hearing woman, I think every man is born hard of hearing.
That's so true. You would be like the best hearing man in the world. Did you know that? Even though you say you're hard of hearing, you're like the best hearing man.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, you know, it's something though that was really helpful. And honestly, this has been like pretty revolutionary for us as far as like how to get your husband along. And this is from a place of weakness, but Justin Early, who we do the fatherhood stuff with.
Justin Whitmell Early?
Yeah, Justin Whitmell Early.
Sure.
Please let's tag him in this and make him feel uncomfortable that he's not here. Anyway, he had said something while we were at his house, and his wife said something really funny. She said, I'm going to put it on the list because there's no way in the world that you'll remember if I tell this to you. And she has four boys, Justin and four boys, so five dudes in the house. And she said, as a mom with five males in my home, I do not say much. I put everything on a list that they can go check. That sounds really silly, but I am just going to tell you, if she wants stuff done, she sends me a shared note where I can just like click the thing. I'm like, yeah. And if she tells me, like this always happens. She's getting ready in the morning. I'm getting ready to go out too. And she's like, can I just tell you a couple things that I need for the day? I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to retain any of this. And it's like a test that I didn't study for. And at the end of the day, I'm like, did you do the five things? I'm like, I got to be honest. I forgot the moment you told me because my head was not there. And then I'm like, can we try a different way? And she's just kind of like, no, we're going to do it this way for a bit. And I'm like, so anyway, we found the list. It's very helpful. So I'd say also use that. Like, that's I don't so think good. It's always even about, sometimes we hold the metric of our husbands, at least in that sense, right? Where I don't have a husband, by the way. But as a husband, what I'd like to highlight is that, you know, if we said it, that means it's concrete. That means you're going to remember it. That means you should be able to remember it and put it in a file. And I think that when we say things like a list, it's just like, how do we serve the other person in a way that's going to help them? So yeah. That is just something that's really practical, but been super, super helpful for us.
I love that. Yeah, that's super practical. It's really important. I think that a lot of times women, my spouses, I'll say mine maybe specifically, is it feels like almost she feels in a way like she's babying me, and I know you don't want to do that, but it really is. That's just a great communication method, very, very practically. I'll say this also to the ladies. From my perspective, I fully believe with all my heart that your husband will grow into the man you say he is. So I believe how it is really important. I will tell you, for me, the affirmations are so important. The encouragement in you saying, to your point, Diane, when you saying that, like, bring them along on what's important to you and saying, I felt so loved when you let me have that 1 hour to myself. Gosh, I just felt like you were taking care of me. And a man wants to feel like he's taking care of you, and he wants to feel like he's doing a very good job. And I will tell you, I'll just say it again, your husband will grow into the man that you say he is. So be careful with those words.
Good word.
Phil, you've sat in this room all weekend. It's been a very moving weekend. And we have all these wonderful women, 800 women here, and they have husbands at home who have not experienced this. So what would you like their husbands to know as they go back home? If you were to communicate, if you were to be able to sit down with these husbands and say, hey, I want you to know something, what would you like for their husbands to know about what their wives experienced?
I'd like to talk to the husbands. So, if I answer this question, they're going to go home and tell their husbands.
They're going to say, hey, listen to Phil on this podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
I would just respond to the, just respond. Give us the goods, Phil.
Okay, what I would want their husbands to know is that their wife has been given to them as a gift from God. Mm. And after salvation, probably the most precious gift they've ever received. Mm. And if children come into the picture, those are also gifts. And what I would say to the husband is, your calling in life, once you are married, is not just to go conquer the world and tell your wife to come along with you, but you're actually called to partner with her, just as Adam and Eve were to partner in the beginning. And you are called to lay down your life for your wife.
Come on.
And that, once you begin to understand that and live it out, there's a great joy that comes. Because you've heard it's better to give than to receive. Jesus said that. It's actually in the book of Acts that it's recorded. Even our Lord, because I was looking for it in the Gospels one day. It's in the book of Acts. Our Lord Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. So when a husband learns to lay down his life for his wife, he's actually filled with joy. But in Ephesians 5, the husband is the head of the wife. And the husband is the Christ figure. And it has nothing to do with equality. God is not partial. Men and women are equal. We're loved equally. But the man is to show the world what Christ the bridegroom is like by laying down his life for his wife. It literally says that. As Christ gave himself for the church, so a husband is to lay down his life for his wife. And then the wife is the church figure as she honors her husband. And so I've always said it's a lot easier for a wife to give respect to her husband when he's laying down his life for her. Mm. So that's, I just pray that your husbands, it's going to take a long time for them to learn that. And honestly, I think I'm learning it in my 60s and 70s. Mm. I was not good at it. Mm. And because also a husband wants his wife to be his best friend. And that's actually in the scriptures also, that older women are to teach younger women to love their husbands and love their children. The love there is not agape love, it's phileo love, to be friendly towards their husbands. So a husband like, I'm marrying, like, we're just gonna hang out. And so that's where your husband will become who you tell them, when your wife is just like, I like you, it really makes it easier for him to, oh, you like me? I want to turn around and give my life for you. So I just think the picture is, it goes both ways.
Transactional.
I'm about that. It goes both ways. But I'm just looking around here and I'm thinking a bunch of you are probably saying, my husband is not doing this. So when we leave here, I'm going to pray that you see some miracles happen.
Oh, that's good. By the way, we're very basic creatures. Like you said, when you realize our wives like us, like, it was just like, that's all we need. Like, you like me? Dude, you lay down my life? Sure. It's true.
I know. We have tension about this. But the point I would say, I couldn't even agree more, that when you, the motivation that comes from a few spoken words in the direction, because at the end of the day, your husband like married you because he loves you and he actually wanted to connect with you. Now, life is hard. Things start to happen, distance can come, all that. But one of the most motivating things I know for me is when you just say, I just like being around you. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's all I needed. And then she's like, there's two beds. Why don't I sleep in one, you sleep in the other? And then we start over. We start all the way at the beginning. But then, time to rebuild, you know? So on the way home, we're going to be rebuilding stuff, you know?
I want to...
Lots of affirmation on the way.
That's right.
Stop. It's not that bad.
I have a question about laying down your life. Phil, I was going to ask this to you, but I actually think it's a more appropriate question for the ladies, is when do Brooke and Phil, how do they lay down their lives practically in a way that's meaningful to you? Because I have some ideas on how I could do that for Kristen, for my wife, and it may not be meaningful to her. So what does it actually mean? We use this term, lay down your life. Make it really basic for us. What are some ways that your husbands do that in a way that's meaningful to you?
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
the first thing that comes to my mind is, I don't know when you started doing this. I feel like it's been in the last year or two, maybe.
I don't know what you're going to say.
It's good. It's good. I promise.
No, I'm fine. I'm just bracing myself.
Is that he will often in the morning say, how can I help you today? Is there anything I can take off of your plate today? And how can I, is there anything I can do to help our family? And when he says that,
and will you text it to me?
Yeah, yeah. I'll put it in a shared note. Yeah. But when he says that, obviously I feel loved, I feel supported, but I feel like, you know, so often as moms and as women, we all know we are carrying so much in our minds, in our bodies, like we are thinking of the whole family all the time. And that's true if you are a stay-at-home mom, if you work full-time outside of the home, if you work part-time, like even statistically, moms carry that load, no matter what their role is. And so when he says that, I feel like he is joining me on our family's mission. He's helping me practically, but I feel like he is joining me in that mindset, because I think women maybe more naturally have that mindset of like, yeah, I'm gonna lay down my life for my family. And we do that in so many different ways. And men absolutely have that, but they also have this drive to conquer and to conquer the world and to be really good at what they do. Now, women have that as well, but I think men oftentimes, their mind is more quickly going to that. And so when he says things like that, I feel like, okay, we're on a shared mission for our family together, if that makes sense. So to me, it's little things like that that are laying down your life. And back to us telling our husbands, that is such an easy, if said the right way, you can say often to your husband, like, hey, I want us to be a team in laying our life down for our family and serving our family. And it's going to look different. How he does it is going to look different than how you do it. And that's really important. The practicality of how that is lived out is not actually all that important. What's important is that you have the shared vision that is important in your home. And that can be a conversation that I think is oftentimes led by the wife. I think often we're waiting for our husbands to have that conversation, but I think we as women can start the conversation and say, hey, like, we've got one shot at these kids who are living in our home right now. We've got a limited amount of time where they're all going to be here. Like, I want to go all in. Are you with me? And most husbands will say, yeah. But they're not necessarily thinking that way all the time.
One thing I love about this, and Diane, I want your answer to this, but one thing I loved about your answer was the question that he asks in the morning is pretty basic. So it's not... The key there is the fact that he's doing it consistently.
Yeah.
So if I were to talk to the fellas, I would say, guys, it doesn't matter how big it is. We like to do grandiose things, but instead of doing one big grandiose thing, why don't you do something small consistently? So if I were to talk to guys, like, guys, listen to this, ladies, send this to your husbands, do the small things every single day. And that's the thing has made the impression is that he does it all the time, right?
Yep.
But I have to mean it, and sometimes I don't. So that's an important detail.
Yeah, follow through on it, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, oh yeah, you can do these things. I was like, I was not prepared for you to give me that much. Like, I want to help, but like, this is a little, like, do you understand? I have other things going on. So just FYI, if you jump into this space, just know what you're in for. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Diane, what about you? What are ways that Phil, very in laying down your life, this whole concept, what are ways that he has done that well in a way that's been meaningful to you?
Okay, so well, to be honest, this isn't the message that was being taught in the church when we got married, by any means. It was husbands lead, husbands provide, that was wonderful. Wives submit, wives respect. And in all honesty, it was an economy where we could be all in. Most of us didn't have to, you know, we lived on a tight budget. We were, you know, associate, I was a worship pastor for the first 20 years, I think, of our marriage. But it was pretty common for us to be able to own a home in California, the Bay Area in California, to be able to focus totally on the home. So it was a completely different economic era that we're in now. So it was realistic for me to do everything at home. while Phil was out conquering the world, like you said. And that was normal, and that's all I knew, to be honest. That's how I was raised, that's how my parents did it. And I don't think I had any idea how overwhelmed I was so often, and it wouldn't have entered my mind, sadly, to ask Phil to help me with anything. It was just what we were supposed to do. So there's that. This is a completely different era. And what has happened in our home is that Phil has risen to, before I did even, to the challenge of the here and the now, without me even having to ask him or suggest to him that I needed a little bit more help. He has just made that a part of his regular routine. One morning, you know, I had always done absolutely everything, and I was up in the, I was in the living room having my devotions, and Phil got up and started emptying the dishwasher without me even asking.
Come on, Phil.
Phil. Jesus.
Amazing. I don't know how this was on my mind, ladies, so you don't filter this, but I just kind of said across the room, Phil, that is so sexy.
Come on. Let's get that fifth baby.
This is fantastic.
Let's get that fifth baby.
I have not emptied the dishwasher in decades.
Phil, I'd be motivated in the same direction. And if you ladies knew the power that you had with that phrase, whatever is your biggest pain point, just wow.
I heard a preacher say one time, if you want to have beautiful intimacy with your wife, take out the garbage. So, I think there's something there. Are you going to say more?
No.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's it. So
I wanted to say one thing. Yeah. I don't know if he's still over here because he had to leave, but there's one of my best friends here, Steve Marshman, who helped plant this church. And amazing. He was F-16 pilot and got an MBA, and he and his wife taught here. And he's 10 years younger than me, but a year ago yesterday, his wife went to be with Jesus. So he's here, and he's a widower. But for 7 years, he laid down his life. All he did was take her to cancer treatment after cancer treatment. Mm. And I'm getting emotional here. He actually, without saying anything to me, was modeling for me for these last 7 years what it looks like to lay down your life for your wife. So we're talking about the little things, you know, giving our wife a break or giving our mom a break. That's great. But there could be something much more difficult ahead. And so to be able to understand this as early as possible as husbands, that this is a blessing and a calling. And yesterday he went to the grave. You know, it was raining. You know, there was a bench out there. But, you know, he just realized, you know, she's not here. You know, she's with Jesus. But it's like he lost her yesterday. So anyway, that's just the beauty of marriage and laying down your life for someone. Yeah. So he's an example to all of us here.
Wow. It's beautiful. Brooke, the original question here that I asked Phil, I want to ask you the same one. If you were to have a talk, again, this has been an emotionally charged weekend. It's been meaningful. God's been moving in all of our hearts. And we have a bunch of husbands who are at home who haven't experienced it. What do you want the husbands of the women here today, what would you want them to know about this weekend as they go back home?
I think one of the things that comes to mind is being open to the fact that, especially if you had the kids, gentlemen, your wife had an experience, an encounter, met with the Spirit, probably has a lot going on that you haven't even got to experience. So I'd say the first thing is, take a moment of time, and ladies, I would definitely encourage you to do this, is take a moment of time to like debrief what happened here. Debrief what the Spirit spoke. I mean, although it's hard, like go on a date or just make some space, and then even it doesn't have to be right when you get back. Just say, hey, I want to share with you, you know, what's been happening. So I'd say the first thing is make space to listen to what actually happened. Because I think there's a lot that God's doing in each of our lives individually, and you don't want to let that go too far with like, where you're, you know, you don't want that distance to grow too much. So that'd be the first thing. And then I want them to know that when your wife encourages you or gives you a nudge in the direction of godliness, she's not doing that because she thinks you're doing something terrible. It's because she's trying to call you up and she doesn't always know how to do it.
Applause for that one.
Yeah.
It's good. Say that again. That one's good. Put that again.
It's not that she's trying to criticize you. She's trying to call you up, but she doesn't always know how to do it. Yeah. And so I think having sensitivity for the mess. Elizabeth calls me up, and sometimes it's not always the most motivating. And we chat about that. Like, that's the most demotivating way to get me to see what you're trying to say. And I think I know what you're saying, but how you're saying it's a real barrier to me wanting to do it. And then she's often saying, it's how you say it, it's not what you said. I'm like, I just told you this, right? Anyway, so I think your wives really do, gentlemen, they really do see what we can't see. And honestly, one of the gifts of marriage is that your wife can call you up to who you can't see yourself to be. And ladies, if I could just encourage you, the more gentle, the more honest, the more sincere, the more patient, the more kind, and kind is a huge word, the more kind you can do that, the more he will respond. And I know after you've said something 18 times to a toddler and to a husband, and I don't mean to put them in the same camp, it's very irritating. You're like, you should know this. But honestly, just like we've talked about, we are not wired the same. And oftentimes we forget that and we go, you should know. I would have known by now. Of course you would. That's fine. But he's wired very differently. And so I'd say be patient with the process and call him up in a way that is compelling and winsome.
Man, that's really good. Elizabeth, you're going to say something on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the calling up. I do probably too much. And the words and the timing and the way I say it, it's not a strength for me of doing that with graciousness, with kindness. So I mean it from a place of love, but it very often does not feel like love to him. And sometimes it's because I wait too long. Because when I'm having the conversation, when I'm bringing something to him, I'm not just bringing him something I noticed, I'm bringing something I'm really frustrated about. And so learn from my failure in that speak up sooner and be really thoughtful with your timing, with your tone. And it goes so much better if I acknowledge his heart and if I acknowledge all of the good things I'm seeing first. It feels a lot less like, hey, I'm just gonna give you a list of everything you're doing that you need to be improving, which is often my go-to. And I've hurt you deeply in that way because I do that far too often, and I encourage not often enough. And so I think especially if we want our husbands to be able to hear the things that we really, in all the stuff the last couple years that Mom unpacked of our being an easer, like it is our responsibility in a lot of ways to play that role in our husband's life. But if we want to effectively play that role, we need to learn really good communication strategies. And we need to make sure that we have a really good balance of encouraging them, of calling out who they already are and who we see them to be, so that they can actually have ears to hear us. And it's the same with our kids, right? If we are constantly telling our teenagers what they're doing wrong, they're really gonna tune us out. They might tune you out anyway, even if you're encouraging them, but especially if you're not encouraging them and telling them all the beautiful things that you do see in them, they're gonna hear you a lot better when with a loving tone, with an encouraging tone, you say, hey, there's also just this one area that I've noticed that, hey, I think if you tried it this way, it might go a little bit better. Mm. And I think especially if you're coaching your husband on parenting your kids, which we do a lot as moms, that tone, very quickly, use small amount of words. They don't need us to go on and on and on and on and on. You can say it really, really briefly, like, hey, you're doing a great job with whatever kid, you name the kid. Here's something I think might help you just like get through a little better, and then leave it at that.
I often say to you, please, just less words.
Yeah.
Less words.
Yeah.
Just say clear, less words. You got it. Okay. Yeah. Don't need the backstory. Just need the
Can I just remind all of us women just really briefly that all of our husbands, no matter how well they were brought up and how well they were loved, because of our culture, are walking around filtering our words through a narrative of shame. It's just pervasive. And if we look at our husbands and we know that the most oblivious husband, it's there. And if we know that, we're just gonna talk differently. That they're already shaming themselves because they're being shamed constantly. Every advertisement is aimed at or illustrates these perfect men with sculpted bodies, and they're just aren't realistically. The things, the expectations for men, just like the expectations for women, are impossible. Yeah. And if we know that, I feel like that just softens our approach.
Yeah, that's so good. By the way, we've been talking in this one-sided. We got 800 women in the room. Fellas listening, our wives love it when we say specific things about them that we love.
Yes.
Right? Is that right? It's not just men who have words of affirmation.
No, absolutely.
So when you see something in your wife that you love, you say that to them. Justin Whitmell early talks about encouragement. Encouragement is seeing something good in someone else that they should keep doing. So he talks about this concept. It's beautiful. Rebuke and encouragement. Rebuke is seeing a danger ahead for somebody else and pointing it out, a danger they might not be able to see. Encouragement is seeing something good that someone else is doing that they should keep doing. Yeah. So guys, if you like when your wife does something, say it to her. She loves that. She wants to hear that because they want so badly, both of us. We want to love the other person well. We want to know when we're loving that other person well. Yes. A line I love, my friend Chris Hart says this. He said, we were talking on Friday. He goes, hey, with Kristen, he goes, look for the best in Kristen this weekend. Because something happens when you look for the best in somebody is you only see good. It's impossible to see bad because you're only looking for the best. So again, we're talking about like coaching guys on how to be, you know, on women how to love their husbands. Well, hold on, guys. It goes the exact same way. Our wives want to hear the same thing. Or can you say something?
No, I just said, yes, sir, I agree.
Yeah, thank you. See, that's about food's encouragement. So I feel like I should keep doing that.
I know your love language. I got you.
Yeah, that's right. I want to go, this actually is a serious turn, but there we got questions from the audience on things for this weekend. And one question that came in was a question about, are there any ladies here or grandmas who have experienced the loss of a child? This one they asked particularly about a child over 2 years old. They lost their 5-year-old June 21st of this year. So, wow. I mean, your heart just breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, just even reading it, I can barely read it.
Yeah.
So what about for the women or the grandmothers who have lost a child?
Yeah, I mean, that has not been our story. We're slow to speak to things that we haven't experienced personally, but we have a lot of people in our circle that have. Abby, wherever she's at, I'm going to cry if I see it. She lost her little girl, 8. Anyway, she's on the podcast. You should listen to her episode. Very helpful. Abby and Tano, their situation. Yeah. But I would say just what we'll do is we'll have a little moment. If that's your experience in the room, I think what would be really helpful is just to meet us over here. We'll introduce you to Abby and have someone that can actually speak to that. Because I think we could say a lot of things and some may be helpful, but I don't want to waste words on that because that's a real sensitive one. So,
but
connect with her.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, did you have something to add there? Look like you did.
No, I mean, I love that you mentioned Abby, and Abby, we're putting you on the spot, but Abby is a wealth of not just wisdom, but a woman who has deeply suffered and still deeply loves Jesus. And we talked, Joe Mark touched on this a little bit yesterday, but in suffering like that specifically, I mean, a loss like that, that will never make sense. It is so hard, even hurtful at times when we hear in Christian language of like, to look for the good and God can make that good. Like, there's nothing good about a loss like that. God does not think that there is anything good about a loss like that. But I love what John Mark touched on yesterday of suffering has this really unique opportunity that is not promised. I think it starts with a heart posture of like, I want God to do some good with all this horrible stuff that is not good. But we can't access any of that. We can't access any of the really beautiful things it can do in our family and in our character until we have fully thrown ourselves completely into grief with God. Yeah. And so if whoever that is that asked that question, that had that loss, any of you in the room that have had any sort of loss, and you're sitting in this weekend and there may be parts that you enjoy, but you also just feel so lonely. You feel so much grief
And like, do I even fit here? And does anybody even know any semblance of my story? And is God good? And
yes,
it's okay to have all of those swirling questions and feelings and love Jesus and want to worship at the same time. Yeah. And yeah. I think that is the mixture that all of us in the room, no matter what kind of loss, we all face loss on a daily basis.
Yeah.
No matter what type of pain or suffering, we need to get a lot more comfortable with that mixture.
Yeah.
Because I think that's actually like right where the Spirit of God is. This side of heaven, that's where he is. Actually in heaven, we will only get to experience the full freedom of it, the full joy, with none of the mixture. But I think this side of heaven, we need to really learn to embrace that mixture.
Yeah. Let me just say one last thing. Cool detail about Abby is, we have an amazing team that is not on the stage, but we would not be on the stage without our insane team. And Abby actually is our events person. She's the reason all this is actually happening right now. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful gift. And so Abby, team, thank you. Christina, Chad, the whole guy. We love you guys. So
like you said, one quick, I don't know, encouragement, exhortation. Abby's loss, this woman's loss, is on all of us, this community of women.
Yeah.
That's
we
good.
Must step into their lives and their pain and their discomfort and carry it. And she'll never be over it.
No.
So, you know, I knew her little girl. Remember Abby when she came over for Thanksgiving? For me to just bring up stories about her and remembering her is on me. I'm not afraid that I'm going to make her think negative thoughts or something. She's thinking them every minute of every day.
Yeah.
She doesn't have four children. She has five children. And that is on us. And we have become, in America, we're so isolated from each other's pain. We want to share all the joys, high five it all. Congratulations cards are all over Target. But we're afraid to share their sorrows, and they will carry that sorrow for the rest of their life. Grief will never end. Every event, when she would have gotten married, when she would have gone to college, when she would have had children, Abby has to lament and grieve every one of those moments, and we need to so be close enough to her to be able to do it with her.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Phil, will you? You're so good on this. You have your Bible on your lap. The David, I just think about David and how familiar he was with grief and his prayers in grief. Will you talk us through a little bit about what those prayers can look like in those moments of grief?
Well, we've never experienced losing a child. I think that Diane said it well. That's the kind of thing that you will never get over. You know, Jerry Sitzer's book, A Grace Disguised. There's a friend who's been on our podcast.
Yeah.
So, in a moment, he lost his wife, his mother, and the baby?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And became a single father, and he wrote this book that is called A Grace Disguised, and God used it in our lives. It's what God caused us to come over to Ben, but that's another story. But he said, you never get over the mountain. Like, I'm over it now, it's okay. And so it hasn't been my lived experience, but I have experienced a deep grief when I lost my mom. And a couple other times, which I won't talk about myself, but I had a pastor friend of mine say to me, well, you were never supposed to lose your mom. And I said, what? And I thought, no, death was never supposed to be part of this world. And so you're grieving deeply because that was never supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So, and the other two griefs that I've had also were things that were never supposed to happen. So I've learned through this that it is a real grief, but it's because of the fallen world we live in. So we need to remember, you know, to the one who's asked this question, who's lost a child, I can't even imagine what that is like. But I know that the Lord grieves with you. I think I mentioned in my message Thursday night, Isaiah 53, that Jesus is a man of sorrows acquainted with grief. In other words, he grieves deeply and he understands grief. And so when a child is lost, he's grieving. And that's what the verse in Psalms means. And then I wanted to quote one verse from Psalms. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his godly ones. And so a five-year-old is immediately with the Lord. And so that mom needs to remember it was never supposed to happen. It's a temporary separation. God is grieving with me, and I can. What David did is he ran into the arms of God, and you know, it's all over the Psalms, you know.
Yeah.
And he brought his lament and his grief to God. And then if you read those Psalms, Elizabeth pointed this out in one of her teachings, they all, he's grieving and lamenting, and then always at the end, but praise be to God. You know, he always brought himself mm-hmm. to the Lord. And so that's my only thought about this is that this mom will be, there'll be a great reunion
yeah.
with this child. And that doesn't take away the grief right now, but it is a reality that needs to be remembered.
Yeah.
Phil is such a father, and here's something that's fun. My when I met you, you reminded me of my dad, whose name is also Phil. And then
I adopted you as a son.
And that's right.
Me, but.
And then we found something even more fun. What was your mom's name?
Ruth.
My dad Phil, his mom's name was Ruth.
Yeah.
What's your father's name? What's your father's name?
Full. Well, we called him Bill, but it was Charles William.
Charles. My dad's dad is named Charles.
Yes.
How about that?
And that just means you're supposed to keep doing stuff with intention.
That's exactly right.
Maybe you really you're are my his son. Daughter. Maybe you really are one of his daughters.
No, that, let's not get into that.
Culturally, there's space for this now.
I could be.
Yeah.
Hey,
I don't support it. I'm just
what's
saying.
What's the date? Today, I identified as Phil's daughter.
No. You are a man with long hair.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're his brother, and I adopt you as a son.
You're not a daughter. You're a man with long hair. That's a quote of the century. Right.
All right, let's talk. We had a bunch of questions on social media. So you all are very active on social media, which you're holding a very, very good tension there. And I'd like to hear about this. The question was, how do you have limits and boundaries around social media in a way that maintains your mental health? So this person said they either get sucked in altogether or they delete it altogether. So this pendulum swings back and forth. So I'd love to hear how do you hold that tension when it comes to social media?
Well, first of all, who knows what he's talking about, right? Like. Please be honest. But that room, no one struggles with this over on this side. Yeah, right. You're right. If you're alive and you have a phone, you've done this.
And by the way, just to hold the tension even more closely, I'm going to video this and then post it on our socials.
Yeah, please do.
Good.
So I actually, well, you're going to love this then because my answer is actually, this is what you do. So I'm going to throw it back to you and say, that's your job. So Joey, I would ask you, as a person who leads in this area, what would you advise people to do? And I didn't know this question was coming, so I'm actually really happy, but what would you advise people to do? This is your space, right? And that's what Reclaim Well is all about. So that you told us about that yesterday, but actually I'd love for you, I think you'll have the most wisdom on that.
I mean, I think that we want so much on this topic. We want so much to have such a clear answer. And the invitation I would give to you is an invitation into the gray waters, is to say, that this is a complex topic. Our business, which helps people change their relationship with their devices, would be a lot easier if we were to just say phones are bad, social media is bad. I mean, it's more clear. It's a very clear answer when you're saying that. So I want to encourage you through this lens, I want to encourage you to think through relationships and think through, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, that we have a relationship with phones. That's weird. We as adults don't have relationships with objects. I don't have a relationship with my lawnmower. I don't sneak out for a quick mow when a conversation gets going.
But could you imagine, right?
Yeah, like there just to tiptoe out.
Still so dark. You just hear the start of the engine.
There are husbands who would do that, though. They just
you
go
hear the start
mow.
Of the engine. She's like, oh no.
So it's odd that we have a relationship with an object. And if we can look through it through the lens of relationship, the reason why I believe this is important is when we start to see like this, okay, this is starting to impede on relationships that are important to me. And that relationship could be, and if you've noticed things like this, if you notice this impatience in yourself when your kids want your attention, but they distract you from your post. Like that's okay. Yeah. That's impeded in the way of that.
Yeah.
Or for yourself and your quiet time. We I'm working on a book right now called Digital Thorns, which is all about this idea that our phones represent the thorns that Jesus talks about in the parable of the sower. And one of those thorns. So Jesus says the thorns represent the worries of life, the pleasures of life, the deceitfulness of wealth. Worries of life sounds a lot like Twitter feeds and news feeds, right? Pleasures of life sounds a lot like Netflix, gaming, gambling, even nefarious things like pornography, or other translations say the desires for other things, so just everyday distractions. That's another one. And then the deceitfulness of wealth is where it's fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. The deceitfulness of wealth. Jesus didn't say wealth, he said the deceitfulness of wealth. So let's just imagine you're on a vacation in Tampa, and you're having a great time with your family, and then you see somebody else on Instagram on a vacation in Tahiti. All of a sudden, Tampa's not so fun. right? The deceitfulness of wealth. Wealth has told you, if you had that Tahiti money, your life would be great. So it's starting to, and so what happens is it's starting, these thorns threaten to choke out the seed in our lives and make it unfruitful. So as you start to detect that, this takes an immense amount of two things, probably three things. One of them is self-awareness. One of them, the second one, really the main thing is kind of humility around this. Heard Andy Stanley said once, he goes, you know, the way that you know that you're drinking too much is if someone's ever said, you're drinking too much. So you know you're on your phone too much when someone has said, you're on your phone too much. Wow. I was talking with some ladies in the hall, three-year-olds will say that to you, right? Anybody raise your hand, have you felt that?
Yeah,
you're thinking, mommy, no phone, right? This is a thing that happens. So yeah. When you can begin to detect that, I would encourage you to be so aware of that and see, is this impeding, there's a lot of stuff on our phones, but is this impeding on my relationships with others?
Yeah.
The one other, the last thing I'd add on to this, the Gottman Institute talks about bids in a relationship, these bids that people are putting out, verbal, nonverbal bids that ask you, hey, will you connect with me? So you can, when you detect a bid in a relationship and you're on your phone, I believe the six most powerful words in the English language are, let me put down my phone. When your child wants to talk to you, be like, oh, honey, let me put down my phone. Because what you do, you bestow value on that person. Yeah. When you put down your phone, you bestow value on them and you make eye contact with them. And what you're saying to them is, honey, there are 8 billion people on earth who can theoretically reach me on my phone. And right now, you're the most important one of them all.
Yes.
And so think about
that. Yeah, but yes, yes, yes.
We are in an intimacy crisis, and I believe that's how you slowly rebuild intimacy. That's how you slowly build intimacy, being seen, fully seen, fully known, fully loved. So that's a complicated question around social media. Yeah. What I would encourage people is to go in your home, very practically, establish sacred times and sacred places that are absolutely phone-free. There's a guy named Carlos Whitaker who's prolific on Instagram. Carlos told me that he's just blocked out his social media time. This is the only time I do that.
Yep.
So while it looks like he's constantly on, he's not always constantly on, he's blocking that out. So it's attention you can hold. Think through the lens of relationship. How's it getting in front of other relationships? Yep. And be humble to listen to the people around you who will tell you, hey, you're on your phone right now.
Yeah.
One real practical, last thing.
Yeah, you're good.
Date night phone swap, the most practical thing you can do. When you go on a date night, the babysitter needs to reach you. Just swap phones with your spouse sitting across from the table. You won't doom scroll their phone. They won't doom scroll your phone, but you still are available to others. So begin to think of these little practical ways. That's a contextual thing that you can do.
That's Joey, that's good.
Isn't that great?
Do that. That's good. I like that.
It's super helpful.
It's really, I mean, you should write a book. This is my idea.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Just imagine real quick if you were to hand your phone over to your spouse and unload the dishwasher at the same time. How sexy.
Would that be the sexiest thing a man
could ever do?
Whoa.
Goodness gracious.
I don't even want to talk about what's happening.
That date will end well.
Yeah. That date will end well. Phil, I am rubbing off on you, and I am so grateful. It has taken 20 plus years for you to joke about this. I'm so thankful. Anyway, I was just going to highlight, I know you're not asking this, but again, during the break, we'll have this is what you guys do, which I'm so excited about, and the resources you're creating at Reclaim Wealth. So there'll be a QR code. It's like 7 days free. Let's put that in the show notes, too. I'm handing that out over the internet.
Thank you. Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe we won't do that. I'll wait for later until you can do that. But anyway, we'll either edit this part out, but for everyone in the room, we'll make sure that's up. But that's just one resource of a handful that can help in a deep way. But that was so helpful. Thank you. I'm really glad you answered.
Well, thank you. We got about 7 minutes left.
Sure.
So I want to talk, Elizabeth, you gave a beautiful talk on this idea of limitations. And I'm going to butcher this because I'm not reading it. You say that limitations can be irritations that lead to, that are invitations that lead to transformation. I'm proud of myself for doing
close.
That. Thank you.
That's impressive. That's cool. I don't even remember exactly what I said. So
this, I wanted for the group, this one thing that I was wondering myself yesterday as I heard that, and someone asked about is that, how do you know when it's a limitation that you need to submit to entirely? And I'd love everybody's opinion on this. And Elizabeth, I want you to start. How do you submit the limitation you submit to entirely, and then the other ones you kind of push against? The one, it's easy to just throw up your hands and say, well, it's a limitation, I can't do anything, versus saying, no, I need to press into this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, some are obvious, right? Like if the limitations are coming from one of your kids, like that's not really optional, right? And I remember I used to get really frustrated kind of at the beginning of our journey with Birdie and then having a fourth after her and just feeling like my life was far beyond my current capacity. and I would often have people tell me, you just need to take stuff off your plate. And it would frustrate me because, well, and there were times when they were right, when I did need to do like a life audit. And that's what I'm gonna lead into because I think that's really important. But there are times when the things on your plate are not actually things you can take off. And I think we're not really helping each other when we say, well, you just need to do less. We need to ask more questions than that. We need to ask really thoughtful questions. Is there anything that can be taken off your plate? I think that that's really important. So I want to kind of answer this two ways. There are seasons where you feel like I want these limits to be optional. I'm ready to scratch any of them, but you just can't. And can I just say that in those seasons, we know this, but we need to hear this often. You don't have the capacity to do all of those things, but God is helping build the capacity for you to be able to shoulder those things.
Yeah, that's good.
Just a few months ago, we were sitting in an urgent care waiting for a chest x-ray for our daughter, Sloan, who got influenza B at the end of July. And it turned into pneumonia. We were about ready to go on vacation with my family in Tahoe the next morning. I had way too much to do that day. I had not planned on having to go to a second doctor to get a chest x-ray for my daughter. I have Birdie there with me. She hates being in doctor's offices, is super triggered by them. She's kind of losing her mind. I'm waiting in this urgent care, which takes forever. And I just had this moment of like self-reflection and just this minute of, I just kind of started like chuckling at myself, realizing I am entirely unflustered right now. 9 years ago, I would have been a stressed out mess.
Yeah.
Like having to add that to getting a family of six on a vacation and all of that. And it was this moment of being able to look back and to actually be able to tangibly see the capacity that has grown in me from all the seasons of feeling like I was drowning.
Yeah.
So I think we need to hold on to that hope. But there have also been so many times in my life when those people who said, you just need to take something off your plate, and I was mad at them, actually were right, because there were things that I was continuing to press into because they were important to me that really I needed to let go.
Yeah.
And those feel like small deaths, sometimes big deaths. There's grief attached to that. And so I think we need to be really self-aware of doing regular like self-audits, life audits, of is there anything that I'm doing that used to fit, that I used to have capacity for? I used to be a great cook. I'm a terrible cook now.
No, you're actually still a great cook. You just don't have time to make a lot.
Exactly.
That's different.
Exactly.
That's different.
That used to be of like high value to me. That I fed my family a certain way, that I made, that I cooked all the time. And it's not that that's not still a value. I wish that I had time to still do all of that. But there are new things in my life that are also of high value. And so certain things have had to just change their priority. And we need to be willing to listen to the people around us. This is huge. When there are things that we are continuing to put at an up here level value that need to now be down here because there's other things that are more important, but we have just, we're a little behind in making that switch. And so when it comes to the limitations that maybe we do need to make a change, and it might be a drastic change, it might be something really little, it might be something really big, that's when we really, really need community.
Yeah.
And if you're unsure if it is a limitation that you are supposed to do something about, you need community all around you.
Yeah.
And you need to be willing to listen, even if it's something you're like, I just really want to hold on because maybe it's the one thing you enjoy. And it's frustrating because all of the other limits that are not movable are the thing that's making doing the thing you enjoy really hard, you know? I think we really need to listen to the people around us, and then the ones that you know what limitations are not movable. And those are the things you really need to go through the process of like noticing, really asking yourself, like, what is my heart towards these? And God, would you just help me? Would you help me accept what this limitation is? And you give me wisdom to know which ones are movable.
Yeah, I'll make mine really fast, but I just want to say that, you know, Chick-fil-A for dinner is not a sin. And I'm really grateful that you can't always cook, because if not, we would never have some of these other gifts. So her limitations, blessing in disguise for me.
I know you're kind of kidding about that, but there actually
that's
is
true.
No, I actually there's some real truth in that. Is
yes.
that self-imposed pressure like that? No, that's
she's just way more chill when she's like, I'm not doing dinner. I'm like, oh, praise God.
Yeah, what a gift.
Literally, when I say that, everybody in the family is like, yes.
No dishes. We're not doing salmon. Screw salmon. Anyway.
When Sloan found out that she was doing salmon bowls, she asked if she could come to our house for dinner.
I know. Oh, I know. She's like,
she
can I just...
me like 20 times.
Can I just have chicken just nuggets with saying, pops? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, you can drop me off at Almond Pops. I'm having dinner there.
Yeah. She's 7. But let me just know something really fast. Is the question that was kind of presented is, what do you do? Could you actually just say it one more time?
Yeah.
How do you know which limits to accept and which ones to pray against, push
just
back on?
Really, really briefly, to just be really practical with that response, I think that there are some things that are pretty obvious. Like Elizabeth's health's a limitation. Birdie's health is a limitation. And I say no to those. Now, I don't mean I say no to her or Birdie. I say I believe there's a better future, and I am praying for healing, and I'm praying for Birdie. And so is it a limitation that I have to hold? Yes. And is it like a painful prophetic vision of the future of what could be? Yes. And I think the point is to both pray for healing and to ask and believe that, God, what if you did do this? We've seen this in health things in our family already. Certain things he has healed, and it's been incredible, and then certain things he hasn't. And it's a real limitation on us personally and as a family. But I think with each limitation, there is an invitation, like was said, to actually begin to pray and join God of like, what if you did? Like, what if you did? So I think every limitation is an open door. It's an invitation to actually begin to be curious with God. And the cool part is he'll do it or he won't do it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, it will be very clear. And I think with this particular thing with your health and with Birdie, like it's been very clear, not yet. And I don't know if that's like till heaven, but I'm going to still keep at every day. Just my favorite, Frank Laubach, my favorite person on prayer, has this analogy that every time we pray, it's like throwing a pebble into a pond. Each day, each prayer is a pebble. And he said, one day, what's cool about when you keep throwing those pebbles, one day you might just even be able to, after throwing so many pebbles in the pond, walk across on dry ground.
That's good.
And so each day, if I could just give you the visual, it's just throwing a pebble into a very deep pond, and it's just going to take time to build up. Prayers build. And each prayer that you pray is a moment where God might continue to break through that limitation, or he may have something different or better, but that still means we should press in a deep way.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
Diane, do you have anything to add to that on the limitations?
I was thinking when Elizabeth was speaking, I had already read her limitations, every version of her limitations. It was a lot of work that she put in, as you can tell, to that message. And in so many ways, we're alike that I thought when she was growing up, she was like, we used to call her my shadow because she always wanted to be close. And I thought we were wired the same, but we really as adults have discovered how differently we're wired.
Yeah.
So whereas Elizabeth is always capably pushing past her limitations, I am the opposite end of it, needing to be nudged forward to push into discomfort at times. Brooke, you're the one who used that word with me. It's okay to be uncomfortable.
It wasn't a fun conversation. I don't remember. I don't know what it was.
What a nice way of saying, come on now, let's get going. So my limitations are more inward. The way I'm wired is not necessarily well suited for this world culture right now. That is just get it done. There's a whole book on management, time management, called Getting It Done or Get It Done or something. I read it and I was just lost.
That's great.
And I've read every time management book ever out there and done all the things they say. I'm no better at managing my time than I was. But my limitations are more in myself and accepting this is the way essentially God wired me. He is not waiting around for me to get more things done, to write faster, to study faster, to do my stuff faster, to organize. I mean, Abby, what she has created for us here, she's like a mastermind of tasks and what order they need to be in, I have zero of that. Okay. And learning to come to, and Phil's been my greatest help in this. He loves this about me. He's the one conquering the world, getting it done with his long lists that always he accomplishes. And he loves that I'm not like that. And yet all my life I've lambasted myself because I'm not like that. Mm. So for me, it has been more embracing there is a beauty in the way that I am. And not comparing myself to these high achievers. Amazing. I do not like the label amazing. Please never call me amazing. But we feel like we have to be amazing, but maybe we don't. Some of us are just not wired for amazingness. And some of us have to just say...
I know you are. You know, it's funny because I think we're in a cultural moment where everyone actually is like, no, I'm pretty amazing. Right? Like, I am the best. And I think what you're saying is truth. Like, it's okay to not always feel like you have to be the best. Yeah.
Let's just be the kindest version of ourselves that we can be. Pace ourselves at a pace of love.
Isn't that Phil, I want to seal all of this, and you're so good with it. I want to seal all of this with the word. Phil, will you give us 60 seconds? I'm sure you got a Bible in front of you. Will you just seal all this discussion with, and take us back to the rock here?
I don't know if I can do it in 60 seconds, but I'll try.
45.
Okay. I'm thinking about this from a whole kind of different lens. So Elizabeth quoted Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those who love God and who are called according to his purpose. The very next verse says, and those whom he predestined, he also called to become conformed to the image of his son. Your circumstances, your limitations are part of what God is using to make you more like Jesus. And that is an inner work, and that's what he's preparing you to be with him forever. And we lose sight of that this life is just preparation for eternity. As you're faithful here, Jesus said, he who is faithful over little, I will make faithful over much. You're going to not just hang around on a cloud for eternity. You're going to have responsibilities. And he's using the irritations. What's her quote? Irritations become?
It was really good.
What? Can you say it?
It was limitations or irritations that are invitations to transformation.
Invitations to become more like Jesus.
That's good.
Philippians, he who began a good work in you, that's an inner work, will complete it until the day of Christ.
Yeah.
And so... You embrace your limitations. You know, when parenting in our film service, we say one of the things you do when your kids are middle school, especially, and even earlier, you help them discover what they're good at. And you need to know what you're good at, but by the time you're 30-something, you're figuring out what you're not good at. And that's just as important to know what you're not good at, because if you keep trying to do what you're not good at, you're going to overextend yourself and you're going to be frustrated. And so the scriptures that I wanted to share was just, we've shared these, I think, in other podcasts. In it's not going to be 60 seconds, but I'm almost done. 2 Corinthians 10, Paul says, we will not boast beyond our measure, but within the measure of the sphere which God has apportioned to us, we are not overextending ourselves. So Paul's saying, I have limits. And you know what hit me recently? Philippians chapter 1. I love Philippians. I memorized chapter 1 a long time ago. But he says, Paul's in prison, and he says, my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel. And so I think that your limitations right now, God's actually doing something eternal with them and something even better. And in a practical way, in these later years of my life, I've been through some real disappointments and hurts and things, and my circumstances changed. I didn't see some things coming, including intentional. I was charted. Diane and I were asked to start this, and she was all over it. I kind of drug my feet. It's a long story. And so as a pastor, we started intentional, but I led it as a pastor because I'm a pastor. And I was actually not that good at leading a nonprofit. And now I gave it to Brooke because he's way better at it. And I have limitations when it comes to that. And the last scripture I want to say, so that's Philippians 1. Remember, your circumstance turning out for the greater progress of the gospel. God's conforming the image of his son. And then I love what David said in Psalm 131, my heart is not proud, or my eyes haughty, nor do I involve myself in great matters or in things too difficult for me. They might not be difficult for somebody else. Not difficult for him to lead a nonprofit. I mean, you are giving people an opportunity to give. I can't do that. But I had a guy who I work with when I serve with an evangelist. He said, are you kidding? I'm just helping him lay up treasure in heaven. I'm giving him the greatest gift. I go, I could never do that. Anyway, so but he can. So, but for me, it's too difficult. And David says, I've composed and quieted my soul like a weaned child rests against his mother. And you women know what a weaned child's like. I don't. Anyway. And then he says, Israel, hope in the Lord. So I just welcome your circumstances, welcome your limitations, and step into how God's made you.
Yes.
We talked last night about confession, and I got to confess I love the four of you. I sure do. Does anybody else love the four of them? Are they amazing?